The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Money.com and Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article, How to Complain and Get Results. It pays to be respectful, organized, and persistent. These days, it seems you can't purchase a product or service without the company promptly following up with a survey asking, how are we doing, or would you recommend us to others? Try to get a quick response when you have a complaint, however, and businesses aren't always so eager to hear from you. In fact, when it comes to seeking help with a problem, consumers' top frustrations are figuring out how to contact the company and being forced to listen to long messages before being allowed to speak to an agent, according to the 2023 National Customer Rage Survey. The survey also found that people aren't getting angrier, but more of them are getting angry, says David Beinhacker, Chief Research Officer at Customer Care Measurement and Consulting, which has been publishing the RAGE survey since 2023. And consumers are becoming more uncivil, influenced by bad behavior seen on social media and elsewhere, he says. But yelling, cursing, or bullying isn't the way to resolve problems. If you want to complain effectively, here's how. Be polite and brief. After all, the person on the other end of the email or phone call likely didn't cause your problem. And long emotional emails often go unread. So try to keep your written complaint to 250 words or less. You don't want to be accusatory, says Christopher Elliott, founder of Elliott Advocacy, a nonprofit organization that mediates disputes between consumers and companies. You want to let them know what the problem is as succinctly as possible and what you want them to do to fix it. It's like a demand letter that lawyers put out, but much nicer. Make sure to provide key information such as dates, the transaction or reservation number, your full name, and your contact details. And be reasonable in your request on how the company can make things right. An airline, for example, is not going to give you a first-class ticket if you didn't get your in-flight cup of coffee, Elliott says. Josh Newman, founder of Chummy Tees, a graphic t-shirt retailer in Sonora, California, has been on the other side of complaints and offers advice. The most effective customer complaints are clear, respectful, and have context. I ordered this size, got something else. Here's the order number. Can you help? That gets resolved fast, Newman said in an email. What doesn't work is a vague rant or sending 5 emails in 2 hours. I've seen people block their own resolution by being aggressive or unclear. Maintain a paper trail. It's always a good idea to keep invoices, receipts, warranties, and other documents for purchases or services that can later back up your complaint. And as you go through the complaint process, retain copies of all communications. Take a screenshot or photo of your communications with a chatbot. Some companies disable the ability to save chats, Elliott said. Many consumers and even some companies prefer to deal with complaints over the phone. Jot down the date and time you called, the name of the person you spoke with, and what was discussed. Better yet, just as companies record calls, you should do the same so you have proof, if needed, of any promises a customer service agent made to you. Note, in some states, you must inform the company that you are recording the call. And avoid these mistakes. Don't wait too long to complain. Your complaint will be taken more seriously if the problem occurred recently rather than months ago. Timing also matters when you use a credit card. You should always first give the business a chance to fix the problem, which can be the fastest way to reach a resolution. But if the business ignores you or you're unsatisfied by its response, you have limited time to request that your credit card payment to that company be reversed. The card issuer will investigate and then decide whether to return the money to your account, called a chargeback. You generally have 60 days from the date your credit card statement was issued to request a chargeback, although many card issuers allow up to 120 days from the date of the transaction. Never lie. If you made a mistake, such as booking a hotel for the wrong dates, own up to it quickly and move on, Elliot advises. Pause before you fire off an email that you wrote while in the heat of anger. Have someone else read it first to make sure your complaint is polite and to the point. And be ready for the growing role of AI. Increasingly, your first contact with customer service will be artificial intelligence chatbots. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Chatbots, for instance, are available 24/7 and are getting better, consumer advocates say. They can solve some basic problems, such as trying to track a shipment, Elliot says. But if you have a more complicated problem, AI is spectacularly bad. For a more complicated issue, request that a representative or agent help you. Or, if the business is local, consider visiting the business in person. And if that doesn't work, escalate your complaint. If you're hitting a dead end, take your complaint up the management ladder. Don't go straight to the top, however, because if the CEO won't help, you've run out of options within the company. Finding contacts for managers and executives often requires some online sleuthing. Check the company's website or social media profile, or look for contacts on the Better Business Bureau's website at bbb.org. Elliott Advocacy also posts contacts information for customer service managers, chief financial officers, and CEOs of about 2,000 companies on its website, and you can reach that at elliottadvocacy.org, and updates the information when businesses change executives' email addresses. Air complaints on social media. Sharing your complaint on a site such as X, Facebook, or TikTok may nudge a company to respond to you. But while seeking revenge or publicly shaming a company on social media might make you feel better, it doesn't always fix the problem. Newman, the T-shirt executive, says social media does get a company's attention, but it's a double-edged sword. We respond immediately to public posts, especially if they're going viral, Newman says. But once it's public, everyone loses flexibility. We've had customers who posted before giving us a chance to fix it, and that delays the outcome. For companies, there's also reputational risk in rewarding bad behavior to save face. Companies are also getting savvier and more selective on how they respond to complaints on social media. What people don't realize is that large companies have very sophisticated ways of monitoring customer sentiment on social media, says Elliott. For example, he says a company can connect your social media username to your account with the business and determine your value as a customer or the likelihood that you will cause trouble. Elliot also notes that you're more likely to get a response if you have a million followers on social media rather than two or three. Be patient but persistent. Give the company time to resolve your complaint. It may take days or weeks to get a resolution. Businesses don't like to say no, so they will probably try to come up with a solution that benefits both parties, Elliot says. They know that if they say no, your next stop is going to be to the attorney general or an outside party, like a consumer advocate, or, quote, I'm calling the TV station. The 2023 Customer Rage Survey found that 52% of complaining customers got something in return. That's up from 42% in 2020. The not-so-good news, 48% got nothing. When aggravated consumers get something back, the survey found, they are most likely to receive one or more of these fixes: money back, an apology, and the product repaired or the service fixed. Many frustrated consumers, though, give up too soon. Being persistent is really important, says Chuck Bell, Advocacy Programs Director at Consumer Reports. Don't give them the satisfaction of giving up. Bell, for instance, spent 3 months trying to resolve a dispute with a Washington, D.C. hotel that had wrongfully charged him $150 for smoking in his room. I called them and said, "This is ridiculous. I'm not a smoker, and I left a pretty generous tip as well," he recalls. His credit card company also challenged the smoking fee on his behalf, but the hotel wouldn't budge. Finally, Bell wrote a letter to the hotel manager saying he is a frequent visitor to D.C. and wouldn't return to the hotel. The hotel dropped the fee, and Bell stayed there again. It's easy to get discouraged if your complaint doesn't seem to go anywhere, Bell says, but knowing that you may be helping others can be an incentive to carry on. If you take the perspective that, quote, I'm not just going to bat for myself, but I want to see this fixed for other consumers, that perhaps encourages you to keep going, he says. And call in reinforcements. If you've tried all the steps above and they still are hitting roadblocks, it could be time to bring in one of these advocacy groups or government agencies. Elliot Advocacy at ElliotAdvocacy.org will mediate between a customer and a company for free. But you must agree that your name and story can be published in an article, which allows others to learn from your experience. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau focuses on consumer finance issues, such as banking, mortgages, student loans, credit cards, and credit reports. It forwards complaints to the companies for a response. While the CFPB's future is uncertain under the Trump administration, the CFPB was recently still taking consumer complaints online at consumerfinance.gov/complaint. The Better Business Bureau, or BBB.org, has no enforcement powers, but it can get a company's attention. It forwards consumer complaints to the businesses and requests a response within 14 days. The Federal Trade Commission at FTC.gov doesn't mediate individual complaints, but it may take action against companies with a pattern of complaints from consumers. You can submit a complaint with your state attorney general's office, which enforces consumer laws and may mediate disputes with businesses. Find your state's contact at usa.gov/state-consumer. And here's an interesting article. Getting rid of the stuff your family doesn't want. Here's how to sell it. If your children are taking a pass on furniture, collectibles, or other items you no longer need, use these tips to cash in on them instead. Charlie Gary's wife, Susan, had a passion for restoring old homes. She also loved fine antique furniture and oriental rugs. Over the years, she accumulated lots of it, Gary says. That may be an understatement. When Susan died in February of 2024, her collection was showcased throughout the couple's 7,000-square-foot home in Louisville, Kentucky. The overflow that didn't fit into their home filled 7 climate-controlled storage units, each 20 feet by 30 feet to the ceiling. After Gary put the house on the market and it sold within 10 days, he was forced to face the elephant, or in his case, the antiques in the room. I said, "What are we going to do with this stuff?" That's a question many of the more than 70 million baby boomers are likely asking themselves as they think about downsizing. Among generations, boomers born between 1946 to 1964 own the largest share of houses in the U.S. with 3 or more bedrooms, according to a report by real estate company Redfin. Although most older adults want to remain in their houses as they age, 44% expect to relocate at some point, according to AARP. Whether they move by choice or necessity, boomers may end up in a situation similar to the one that Gary, who is 77, faced after he sold his home. When he moved in with his younger daughter in Cincinnati, he took a bed, a dresser, and a couple of chairs. The rest had to go. The obvious choice for boomers looking to unload belongings is to pass them on to their adult children. But the next generation isn't necessarily eager to get mom and dad's china, crystal, silver, and collectibles. These adult children already have their own stuff, says Amy Wilson, founder of Estate Transitions, a project management company in Louisville that helps people redistribute belongings when downsizing. They don't have room for more. It can be hard for boomers to hear that their children don't want some or all of their things, especially if they thought those items would be heirlooms. I hear it all the time, time and time again. These were all supposed to be worth something, Wilson says. However, just because your children aren't interested in your belongings doesn't mean they're worthless. Gary's daughter in Cincinnati and his other daughter in Louisville took some furniture and artwork they knew their mother loved. Gary hired Wilson to find buyers for the rest of his wife's collection and gave the profits from what was sold to his daughters. The key to cashing in on items that you're ready to part with is knowing which are worth trying to sell and the best way to sell them for the top dollar. You shouldn't expect to make enough to fund your retirement, but you might be able to supplement your nest egg, pay down some debt, or even share the wealth with your kids, as Gary did. After all, they probably won't say no to cash. Decide what should stay and what should go. Whether you're downsizing or just trying to declutter, start by taking inventory of what you have. This will also help you create or update estate planning documents such as a will or trust. As you go through your things, do so with an eye towards identifying which items matter most to you. Focus first on prized possessions, says Laura Oliviers, president and co-founder of Silver Solutions, which is headquartered in West Palm Beach, Florida, and provides senior-focused home services, including help with downsizing. If you're moving, consider whether those possessions will fit in your new space and accommodate your physical needs, she says. For example, you might have furniture that is difficult to access or rugs that could be tripping hazards for you. Taking a practical approach will help you establish a hierarchy of what to keep. Once you've done this, then you can figure out how to handle what is left. And talk with your children. Have conversations with your children or other family members about which of your items they want now or in the future. This also gives you an opportunity to let the next generation know what things have sentimental or monetary value. It's okay if they don't want all the items, Avlier says. The point is to establish what your children plan to take so you know which things you can sell or donate without regret. Identify items worth selling. In general, it's worth trying to sell things that cost a lot to purchase and are in good condition, Wilson says. This includes artwork, antiques, furniture, oriental or high-end rugs, fine jewelry, gold, and sterling silver. Vintage toys, clothing, and electronics such as tape decks and turntables are currently selling well among younger generations looking for unique items, says Sarah Hirsch, co-owner of Ben Hirsch Estate Sales in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Instruments such as guitars also are popular. Collectibles are hit or miss. The market for sports memorabilia, comic books, and coins is strong compared with the market for stamp collections, which has declined over the past 30 years, says Molly Grawn, managing director of the Trust Estates and Private Clients Group at Freeman's Hindman Auction House in Chicago. But a rare inverted Jenny stamp can sell for six figures, she says. The inverted Jenny is a misprinted postage stamp that bears an image of an inverted Curtiss biplane known as a Jenny. Most mass-produced Hummel figurines are hard to sell. Crystal, china, dinnerware, and silver-plated platters and serviceware aren't popular either, Wilson says. Upright pianos can be the most difficult to unload. If it's not a pristine Steinway, start looking for a home for it today, even if you're not moving, Hirsch says. In fact, you'll likely have to offer to pay the cost of moving a piano to get someone to take it. And adjust your expectations. Get an idea of what people are willing to pay before you sell anything. Prepare for the amount to be significantly lower than the original purchase price. For example, top-of-the-line furniture that is mass-produced won't command a high price, even if it's relatively new. Most people aren't interested in buying that kind of furniture, Avlier says. They're more interested in unique items such as mid-century modern furniture. Gary, with the help of Wilson, came to the realization that the market for antiques had changed drastically since his wife bought the items he wanted to sell. I had to accept the fact that we were not going to get anywhere close to what she paid for it, he said. If you've worked with an interior designer in the past, that person might help you get a sense of what your items are worth. You could contact antique dealers who might charge a fee for reviewing your items. Online auction sites such as eBay can help you see how much items similar to yours are selling for. For used home furnishings, check out sites such as AppDeco, that's APTDECO.com, and Cherish, CHAIRISH, Cherish.com. Get an appraisal for high-value items. If you have items that were appraised years ago, Grawn recommends having them reevaluated because their value might have changed. You can find an appraiser through the International Society of Appraisers, and you can find them at isa-appraisers.org and the Appraisers Association of America. And they can be found at appraiserassociation.org. Most charge an hourly rate, she says. Best ways to sell. There are several avenues to sell your stuff. The method you choose depends on the types of items you want to sell, the effort required, cost and commissions, estimated proceeds, and what feels most comfortable for you. Consignment shops. Furniture and home decor that are in good condition are relatively easy to sell through a local consignment store. You might be required to send pictures of the items you want to sell so the store can vet them. Otherwise, you simply drop off your items and the store does all the work to sell them. Some stores will pick up items from your home for a fee. Typically, consignment stores will keep 50% of the sales price, Wilson says. With online furniture consignment stores such as App Deco and Cherish, you can take photos of your items and list them for free on the sites. App Deco will pick up your items and deliver them to buyers. It keeps 30% of the sales price. Cherish also provides pickup and delivery, and it takes a 40% commission on sales. And antique dealers. If you want to find a buyer on your own for your antiques, contact several antique stores in your area to let them know what you have. They likely will ask for photos, dimensions, and descriptions of your items, Wilson says. If they're interested, they'll want to see your items in person, which means you might have to take them to their store. If possible, get two or three bids for your antiques. Be aware that the price antique dealers offer will be 50% to 80% of the price they expect to sell the item for, because they have to make money from the sale, Wilson says. Estate sales. Estate sales are no longer just for the wealthy families with a lot of antiques, Hirsch says. Now it's an anything-goes marketplace, she says. As long as you have enough stuff, almost anyone can qualify for an estate sale. You can expect high-quality items made by a well-known company to sell for about one-third of what you paid for them. Typical estate sale companies will come to your home to evaluate the items you want to sell, manage all aspects of the sale, and clean out whatever is left. And we will edit this article today because we are now out of time. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.